First of all, let's thank our sponsors. Tonight's class is sponsored by the Flat, Feldman, and Summers family. Is that how you pronounce Summers? Are they? I don't think I know them. But thank you to those families for sponsoring tonight's class in memory of Bradley Siegelbaum, Mirz Hashem, our learning together, and anyone who else who is learning. Thank you, Jared. Anyone else who's learning through the recording, their learning should be le'ilo nishmaso, an elevation for his soul. So thank you, Flat, Feldman, and Summers families. Okay. Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos. The truth is that because Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, we have a lot of other halachos that are affected even before Shabbos. Starting already tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, for those who don't know, is the beginning of what we call Tanis Bechor. A Tanit Bechor, I'm getting an echo here. Tanit Bechor is when we have a fast for the sake of those who are firstborns. It's connected, as you could probably imagine, to the fact that Hashem saved the firstborns in Egypt, and in sort of, I guess, compensation or reimbursement towards that fact, we fast. At least theoretically, we fast. Usually, this fast is done on Erev Pesach, right? As is in preparation for, you know, the time that was Makas Bechoros. But because it is Shabbos this year, Erev Pesach, so then we push it off. And if we're going to push it off, well, then why would we push it off to Friday, which conflicts with Shabbos? We might as well push it off to Thursday. Like other fast days, because it's pushed off, there is somewhat of a lesser stringency. It's a little more lenient of a fast day. I'm not really sure how many Bechors we have on the call here. I can imagine some people are. If you are a firstborn male yourself, I guess, you know, okay, we got a hand over there. If you're a firstborn male, regular birth, then you are a Bechor. And even if you have a child, I don't see anyone here who has young children, but if you have a child who's a firstborn and is not fasting themselves, you have to fast on their behalf. So that would apply to other people as well.
What about both? There were many years where I was a Bechor and I had a Bechor.
Well, then you can double dip and just fast for both of you. You don't have to fast twice or anything like that. But either way, this fast is generally more lenient. It's not one of the major fasts or even one of what we call the minor fasts. It's more of a custom. And therefore, we have a minhag to... there are many who have the minhag to... I don't know how to put this politely. But make a siyum so that they don't fast. And that's what we'll be doing, Mirz Hashem, tomorrow morning at the 6:05 minyan. And at the 7 o'clock minyan, after the minyan finishes, they will both have siyumim with food to go. You were not eating anything in the shul right now, but the food will be there hopefully at the minyan, and we will take care of the siyum so that you can take it and eat it in celebration of that siyum. So that's the Tanis Bechor. That's how it happens this year. It's on Thursday. Happens to be 2 days before it usually takes place.
Will it also be on Zoom?
I will also be streaming it on this Zoom channel for those who want to watch.
Is it Bachar Yotzi?
Yeah, if you watch it, as we did, I think we did this last year also, just make sure one caveat to that is that you have food with you, so that the food you're eating is sort of more connected to what you're watching, you know, as opposed to sort of just like listening in and then later on eating something. That doesn't really count. It has to sort of be in juxtaposition to the actual siyum so that the food is in celebration of it. So if you're listening or watching on Zoom, just have food ready, preferably a mezonos. I know that's hard when it comes to Erev Pesach, but it's Thursday, so you have a couple days to clean it up. But we'll get to other more difficult times of cleaning up chametz in a second. Speaking of chametz, the next thing that's going to be affected because Erev Pesach is on Shabbos is when you do the bedika. As you know, usually the bedikas chametz, checking for chametz, is done the night before Pesach because that's when you're preparing for Pesach. And we do it in the dark or haner so that we can focus better on what we're looking at as opposed to having too much light and being too aware of all the surroundings. We can't focus on any one area. And it's supposed to be a very thorough check. And therefore, although nowadays it's more of a formality because we do much of cleaning beforehand, so we try to check for chametz. This year, everything is the same. The actual bedikah is all the same. You're going to make a bracha, you're going to check for chametz, make sure not to speak while you're checking for chametz, because technically the bracha is going on the checking. And if you speak in between the bracha and the check, so then you're not really connecting the bracha to the mitzvah. So you make the bracha, you look around for the chametz that you put around, you put out, make sure that you know where you put the chametz. I'm sure everyone has a horror story, particularly the women on the call have horror stories, I could assume, of not being able to find that 10th piece of chametz, which the Gemara really talks about that situation. But to make sure, maybe have a list, someone be the designated chametz placer, and hopefully you won't lose any. Make sure they're well wrapped so that no one trips over them and spreads crumbs all over the place. Make sure they're small. Make sure they're burnable. So you're going to do all that 10 pieces. Make the bracha. Find the pieces. And then say kol chamir, just like you do in every other year. Everything's the same. You just happen to be doing it a little earlier than usual. This, by the way, also means... And this is a quirk in the halacha, because typically on a regular year where Erev Pesach is on a weekday, so you'll have Bedikas Chametz the night before, and then the fast of the Bechor, the firstborn, will be the next day. This year, the fast of the firstborn is before the Bedika. Why is that significant? Practically for everyone here, not very significant in terms of ramifications. If, however, one were to fast, there are some people that do still have the minhag to really fast. So if you have the minhag to actually fast on Thursday, so then when it comes to the end of the fast, we know that the Bedika of Chametz happens also at nightfall, which is also when you could start eating after a fast. In this case, we know that you're not allowed to eat before the Bedikas Chametz. So technically, you're not supposed to eat, if you're fasting, you're not supposed to eat all the way until after Bedikas Chametz, which could add another 20 minutes to the fast, depending how quickly you go and how well you are at putting the stuff out. But the Mishnah Berurah points out, because of the added time, so one could snack on something if you needed to before Bedikas Chametz, but I assume most people here, if they're going to be obligated to fast, they're going to have some kind of siyum to take care of it. Either way, if you have a specific situation for your individual concerns, so you can ask me about it. Okay, that's Bedika. Typically, as you know, on Erev Pesach, we would light a fire of some kind and put the chametz in it. Now, I know Detroit has many different iterations of how to burn chametz. Depends where you live. Some places allow you to put it in the backyard. Some places don't allow it. Some places will have a communal fire in Southfield. Some people used to be that maybe the Young Israel had a fire in our parking lot for the sake of the community. This year we're not doing that, but I believe there is one in Southfield, as usual. That's going to be taking place on Friday morning. Now you're going to say, wait a second, Friday morning, Pesach doesn't start until Sunday. So how is it that we're burning our chametz on Friday morning? The truth is that the burning of chametz on Friday morning is only symbolically connected to what we usually do. This is not really the obligation of burning chametz. Really, technically, we should be burning chametz on Erev Pesach. That's the only time that burning chametz is relevant. This year, however, we can't do that because it's Shabbos. We nonetheless maintain that custom of burning the chametz, lest somebody come along and say, hey, last year, we didn't burn the chametz, or last year we burned it closer, in the afternoon. Technically, this year, because it's before Pesach, you could burn your chametz in the afternoon. But we are stringent to maintain the minhag for the sake of not getting confused next year. Maybe that sounds a little strange to you. How could I possibly think next year is going to be different than what I've always done? How many times have we come either in shul or at our homes and think to ourselves, what did we do last year? Right? What I can't remember the recipe that I made for the Pesach Dick brownies. I can't remember which pot I used for, this Pesach recipe or whatever. Right? There are tons of things that we forget from year to year. And for sure from 2 years ago. So if one were to be somewhat, oblivious or somewhat, distracted with other things and only remembers the fact that they burned chametz in the afternoon last year, so then you can imagine how they would mistakenly do the same thing the next year. So therefore, this year we also only burn the chametz in the morning, preferably at the time that we would burn the chametz on a regular Erev Pesach, which this year would be before 12:35. So we'll do that on Friday. The one difference, the one practical difference of burning one's chametz on Friday this year as opposed to what we would usually do is that we do not say kol chamira, the second kol chamira. We say the kol chamira, we say the bittul for the bedika. That's all the same. But the second one, which we would usually do after we burn the chametz, we don't say. Why don't we say it? Because presumably, we'll talk about it in a second, you're still going to be eating chametz on Shabbos. And if one were to say kol chamira on Friday morning, so then you'd be eating chametz that doesn't belong to you. And you can't acquire things on Shabbos. So there's a lot of different nuances to that. So you do not say kol chamira. You literally just put your chametz in the fire. Whatever chametz you found that Thursday on tomorrow night, you'll put it in the fire and you will just walk away. That's it. Okay. That brings us to the rest of Friday. So Friday, as you know, is treated, as we just said, is treated like as if it's Erev Pesach for the sake of normal Erev Pesach rituals, except for one nuance that I and Rabbi Morris are changing, which is typically when we sell the chametz, we will sell it also before the time of the burning. Obviously, because we can't own chametz after 12:35, right? That's the whole point. We're burning it before that time so that we have no more. So therefore, we would also have to sell the chametz, which is not included in the fire, right? So typically, your sale, right, the paper that says that you're selling it, it would usually say, I'm selling all my chametz in this, that, and this area to the exclusion of the chametz, which is going to be burned. Right, because we want to maintain that chametz so that we can. First of all, we don't want to burn somebody else's chametz. Right, if we sold it to John Smith already, so then we're going to be burning his food, and that's obviously first of all not nice because we're burning somebody else's stuff, but also we won't be mekayim a mitzvah. The mitzvah of burning chametz is what we would call tashbisu. Tashbisu is to get rid of the chametz, and we all have a mitzvah of tashbisu. So typically, the sale would happen before we burn the chametz. This year, however, we're a little more worried about it because on this year, people are presumably still shopping for Shabbos. And what's going to happen? What's going to happen if you're shopping for Shabbos? Let's say you want to get those special bite-sized rolls from Zeman's, right? We'll talk about those in a second, right? You want to get those bite-sized rolls so that you don't have so much chametz. And while you're there, you're saying, hey, look at that cookie. That looks like a real good cookie. Look at that 7-layer cake. I don't know what they're going to be having. I don't know what they're going to have in the bakery tomorrow. My point is, a person could come to buy chametz on Friday afternoon. And if we were to sell the chametz to the non-Jew on Friday morning, so then obviously the bread that you're going to be eating for Shabbos, you're hopefully going to finish on Shabbos. We'll talk about that in a second. But the other thing that you just bought from the store that you thought really looked tasty, what are you going to say? You're going to say, oh, I'm going to, eat this over Shabbos. And then after Shabbos, I'll just put this in the cabinet that I said was sold. The only problem is it wasn't in the cabinet when the chametz was sold. So we want to make sure that nobody goes through that issue. And therefore, if you have chametz before Shabbos, you bought more chametz before Shabbos, the sale is going to include anything you bought before Shabbos, as long as it's within an hour before Shabbos. We're most likely going to do the sale at about, somewhere around 5 o'clock. And therefore, if you want some of that chametz, as long as it's within what you wrote down on the sheet or what you filled out online, so then if you want that chametz to be included, so it must be in that cabinet before about 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. After that, anything you have, which is not in those places that you put down on the sale, none of that is sold. In which case, it's all incumbent upon you. It's all incumbent upon you to make sure that that chametz is not in your possession by the start of Pesach, Motzei Shabbos. So what does that mean? That means two options. And we're going to be jumping around chronologically just because everything's overlapping a little bit. That means two options. Option number one is that the chametz goes down your gullet. The chametz is in your mouth, and you eat all of it. That's option number one. Option number two is that it goes into the toilet. That's option number two. There are no other options. There's no fire you can burn it on. There's no non-Jew you can give it to. Although there are some that, whatever, that gets a little complicated, so don't do it. You're right, you can't just, if you have like, let's say, this comes up more than you would think, if you have like non-Jewish help on Shabbos, right? And you say, oh, I've got this piece of chametz. Do you mind taking it for me? We don't do that for different reasons, but let's just not do it. There is an advantage to leaving some chametz over and not eating all of it. So, for instance, if you were to get those Zeman bite-sized rolls that you're going to use, which we'll talk about soon again, so then you're going to take those rolls, you're going to eat them, but you want to leave something over. Because as I said before, there's a mitzvah called Tashbisu Seor Mibateichem, which is specifically done on the 14th of Nisan. You already burned your chametz that you found on Thursday night, you burned that chametz on Friday morning, but you also want to make sure you can do the mitzvah on Erev Pesach. So what's a way that you can do the mitzvah on Erev Pesach? You flush it down the toilet. Good trivia question. What's one mitzvah you can accomplish in the bathroom? Tashbisu Seor Mibateichem on Erev Pesach, which falls on Shabbos. Not many other mitzvahs you can do in the bathroom. There are other lotas things you can violate in the bathroom, of course, but not many mitzvahs that you can practically do in the bathroom. A good trivia question. I would have put it on the bulletin. Sneak peek at the bulletin. We've got some fun Pesach puzzles for people to figure out. I'm not going to show you too closely, but Pesach puzzles. Don't look at the questions, but the answers are on the back, so you don't have to worry about trying to hunt me down and get the answers. Some fun stuff, things for kids, things for adults, it's good. Either way, so that's in terms of chametz. Let's go into what you can eat on Shabbos. Now, if it were up to the women of the household who have been making sure the house is all clean, or all the men who are particularly helpful, I think I said this last year at some point also, that I once was reading through a Shilos Uchuvos book or article from Rav Shlomo Aviner, who's a big postik in Yerushalayim. He has a text-based Q&A, like Shilos Uchuvos. And somebody once asked him, you know, I'm in yeshiva, and I'm wondering, do I have to help my wife with cleaning for Pesach? So he said, you do not have to help your wife, and your wife does not have to help you. You have to do it together. Right, this is not somebody's job and somebody else coming along to be an aide. Everyone's got to pitch in and do their part. Either way, most likely the person who's more anxious about having chametz in the house is the woman of the house. Just happens to be that way for many people. I know it's that way in my house. I know it was that way in both my in-laws and my parents' house. It's just the way it goes. So if it was up to the woman of the house, they would probably wish that they haven't that there's no chametz in the entire world that comes anywhere near their house on Shabbos right before Pesach, right? That's what they would wish. The problem is twofold. Number one, you have to have lecha mishnah, and number two, you can't have matzah, right? There is a minhag, if not also an ister d'rabbanan, to have matzah on Erev Pesach. There are some people that have a minhag even 30 days before Pesach to not eat matzah. Everyone's got their own minhag. Some people have the minhag to not eat it from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And then everybody should have the minhag, because it's presumably an Issur Rabbanan, to not eat matzah on Erev Pesach. The question is, however, when does that Issur apply? And there are three different opinions in the Rishonim. One says it applies already from the night before, meaning this Friday night. Some people say it applies in the morning, meaning Shabbos morning, and some people say it applies the same time that chametz applies, which is only after 12:35, or actually 11:30. We paskin l'chumra on all three, which means that you cannot have matzah already from Friday night. No more matzah. There is one exception to this, at least linguistically, and that is what people call egg matzah. Egg matzah is also known as matzah ashira. The Gemara talks about matzah ashira. Rabbeinu Tam talks about matzah ashira. It's basically matzah which was made with fruit juices and not with water. Now, there are a whole bunch of discussions that I don't even know the intricacies of anymore, at least, about the proportions of the egg versus the water. Is it mixed with the water? Is it majority egg? Not for now. The point is, at least for Ashkenazim treat matzah ashira as chametz. Now, hold on. I think that's okay, Marjorie. Marjorie asked about matzah balls. I'm pretty sure matzah balls are okay. That's not considered matzah. That would be similar to matzah ashira. We wouldn't call it, you know, we wouldn't necessarily call it chametz, depending on how you make it. But But we're going to get into why is that not Chametz Evin? Zoya? why is that okay?
No, you said that, actually, not necessarily that matzah is Chametz on Erev Shabbos.
Well, matzah is not chametz. Matzah.
Ashkenazim, they don't eat that.
Ashkenazim do not eat egg matzah on Pesach.
Oh, egg matzah. Okay.
Yeah, egg matzah. Yeah. There's an.
Thank you.
I should probably explain. The reason we don't eat matzah on Erev Pesach is so that we want to eat the matzah on the night of Pesach. This depends on what kind of matzah you have, but assuming that you have edible matzah, so then we want you to have a little bit of a cheshek, of a desire, of an appetite for the matzah later on, right? We always think about the matzah, right? How many people think about having the matzah and sort of like look forward to having the matzah, and then after you have your mozi matzah, you're like, wait a second, what was I looking forward to this for, right? You know, because, you know, the grandeur, you know, the majesty of having the matzah again, you know, fades away after you actually have to eat a lot of it, which we'll get to hopefully soon. So the point is, we don't want to eat matzah on Erev Pesach for the sake of having an appetite for it. Egg matzah, however, does not suffice for matzah, and according to Ashkenazim, at least if you are a healthy and capable adult to eat regular matzah, so then we do not eat egg matzah. However, it's not really chametz. And therefore, many people will eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach. Some people will say you should, some people say it's not such a good thing to do. Why should you, why shouldn't you? I just explained why you should, because maybe, or why you could, I should say. You could eat egg matzah because it's not counted as chametz, and it's also not counted as the isser of eating chametz on Erev Pesach, because it's not really matzah. Eating matzah on Erev Pesach because it's not really matzah. However, egg matzah generally is actually what we would call pas haba b'kistanin. Without getting into too much detail, it's not really considered hamotzi. It's really considered mizonos. It would be like a cracker, right? You ever wonder, like, why is a cracker different from actual, you know, bread? Because a cracker is made in a different way. It's made with oil or it's made with other things that are mixed in, which aren't considered bread. However, if one were to eat a lot of it, or if one were to be what we call koveya se'uda, establish a meal with one of those things, so then that would be something you say hamotzi on. Egg matzah falls in this category, and therefore egg matzah is only something we say hamotzi on if we're establishing a meal with it. In this case, we happen to be establishing a meal with it, which is why people say that you can use it. Others would say that there is a special sort of, a special nature to Shabbos meal. Lechem Mishnah should be real lechem. It should be real bread, not quasi bread that's only bread if you make it into a meal. So that's why some people discourage others from using egg matzah on Erev Pesach. If you want to use egg matzah, you can use egg matzah, especially if you have particular anxiety about bringing chametz into the house. That doesn't mean you shouldn't clean up after yourself. It just means that there's less of a problem of chametz afterwards. We treat it like,
Rabbi?
Again, yeah. Yeah, Robin.
On the box of Yehuda matzah?
Yeah.
It says on the side here, and I never saw this before, it says, when Passover begins Saturday night, they may be used for the evening and morning meals of Shabbat.
Exactly, yeah. So that's why they put it there. They're trying to sell more product.
But this was the first time in Costco I saw huge pallets of egg matzah. I've never seen pallets of egg matzah in Costco before.
Someone must have told Costco. Someone must have told them about this. Yeah.
Huge pallets.
They did their research. So that's what many people would tell you. Again, some people will say it's still advisable to have actual bread for the sake of the meals. When you do have bread, let's say you want to be Mekayim, and I'll be doing this, you want to actually have bread for your Lechem Mishnah on Shabbos, and therefore you don't want to settle for having egg matzah. So what should you do? So you can get these little rolls that they sell at Zeman's, the Kazayas rolls, and just be careful. You know, if you want to be extra careful, so then, you know, just eat them as whole bites and give other people. You can make lechem mishnah on multiple pieces of them, multiple bites, you know, multiple rolls of them, and just give them out. You can cut them slightly and be very, very careful. You can have a tablecloth over and then wrap up the tablecloth. You have to just be careful to not leave it over. Trying to think, should we go back to the timing? No, let's stay here for a second. The issue with eating this chametz on your table is presumably you've cleaned the table already, presumably you've cleaned your kitchen already, and presumably you've put your dishes away already. So the question really is, what are you going to use to eat all this food? You can't use your chametz dishes because your chametz dishes are already put away. And you can't then put your chametz dishes away afterwards because that would be preparing on Shabbos for the sake of Pesach. And you cannot prepare on Shabbos for the sake of Yantif. You can prepare on Yantif for the sake of Shabbos if you made an Erev Tavshilin, but it doesn't work the other way around. You cannot prepare on Shabbos for the sake of Yantif. That will have bigger ramifications for later in the day. So what do? Maybe I'll have Pesach dishes. Well, you're going to be eating bread at your meal. So that's also not an option. The best option is to have what Israel calls chad pami, plastic, paper. It's not necessarily the nicest look for Shabbos meal, but it's also, you know, a keem of mitzvos. So in this Shabbos, it's the nicer thing to do, to have plastic, to have paper cups and plates and silverware or plasticware, so that you don't have any confusions between your chametz plates and your Pesach plates. Besides the fact that you'll also have issues with the actual Pesach dishes, if you're going to be using your Pesach dishes, you're going to want to clean them out. And that, again, you can't prepare on Shabbos for the sake of Pesach. So best thing to do would be use disposable plates, cups, napkins, plasticware, and metal tins, whatever it is, right? Just so you can throw it out. And, by the way, make sure that whatever you're throwing out doesn't have chametz on it also. So if you have extra bread, extra little rolls, you don't want to put that in the garbage along with your one-time use stuff. You have to throw that in the toilet in order to get rid of it, get it out of your property, and destroy it. Right? So anything you're using for your Shabbos meal on Shabbos morning, you can throw out, assuming it doesn't have any chametz in it. It is possible, but very difficult, to have chametz at the Shabbos meal, besides those rolls. It's possible, especially if you're going to use kitnios, which you're allowed to still have in your house, right? So let's say you're Gil Stebbins, and you can't get enough cholent in your life, and you want to have a chametz stick cholent on Shabbos morning. So the truth is, you can't necessarily put real chametz, but how many people put real chametz in their cholent? You could put rice and beans in your cholent, because that's kitnios, and you're technically allowed to have kitnios in your house on Pesach. The only issue is that you have to get rid of it somehow. You have to get it out of sight, because you have to somehow not eat it, not have your chametz dishes out and about on Pesach. So what should you do? You could technically make your cholent make your kitnios cholent inside of a 9x13 pan, and then you just throw out the pan. Right? The kitnios in your garbage is not a problem. Chametz in your garbage would be a problem. So that is in terms of the food that you can have at that meal. Let's talk a little bit about the timing of those meals. You might have noticed, and hopefully people already know this, whether they noticed or didn't know notice, hopefully they know this, which is that you should have, Jeff is asking a question, Egmont says, is there a deadline as far as, okay, good. We'll talk about that now. When it comes to the timing of the meals, you'll notice that we made the minyan this Shabbos at 7:45. 7:45, unbelievable. Whoever even gets up that early? Does anybody know what the sun looks like that early? Yes, everybody gets up early that early for minyan, for going to work, for different things in your life. You can get up at 7:30 and walk to shul. Not that big of a deal. Let's not get too carried away with our revolting against the shul for making early minyan. 7:45 minyan, you can do it. Make sure to sign up online. But the reason we're doing that, and you should know, those people who like a faster davening, so you'll want to come to the 7:45, because the Mishnah Berurah tells us that on Shabbos morning when it's Erev Pesach, ein ma'arichin b'tfilah. You don't lengthen the davening. You have someone who's quick, you have someone who's efficient, you have someone who can lane, and guess what? For all those people that can't stand it, there's not going to be a rabbi's drasha this Shabbos morning. I'll make it up by speaking for the next 2 days. But I'm not going to be speaking Shabbos morning. We're going to keep it quick. We're going to go home and we're going to have a meal. The reason is because we want to give people the opportunity to not only have one meal, but to have two meals. You'll have your meal Friday night, but that means you have to have your meal. You have to have a second meal, and then you have to have a third meal. There is something called Shalosh Shudas. We haven't had it at shul very recently. For probably 13 months now, we haven't had Shalosh Shudas in shul, but there's still an obligation to have Shalosh Shudas. Therefore, after the minyan ends, hopefully around 9:15, you'll get home around 9:30, 9:45. You'll have meal number one. This could be a quick meal. You could have a quick dish. Again, with all the little rolls and everything we just mentioned, you have meal number one. You make hamotzi. You have something for the meal, some kind of protein, some fish, some meat, whatever it might be. And then you bench. You have to bench. You take a break. Don't stay at the table. That doesn't count as a separate meal. Get up, walk around, play a game with your kids, take a walk around the block, depending on whether it's raining outside. And then you come back to your meal 15 minutes to a half hour later, preferably a half hour. So let's say you come home, you start your meal at 9:45, you eat that meal for 15, 20 minutes until 10:15. And then you take a walk around the block, you eat whatever, you don't eat. You take a break, you play a game, you read. 10:45, you're back in the dining room, and you wash, you make hamotzi again. You don't make kiddush because this is shalosh shudas. There is an idea of saying a brei pir hagafen, as the Ramah tells us, according to Ashkenazim, to say brei pir hagafen as shalosh shudas, but you don't have to if that's not your minhag. So that's shalosh shudas. So you have shalosh shudas 10:45. When do you have to stop eating? You have to stop eating at 11:33. 11:33 is the magic number. You guys in Detroit should feel grateful that you live in Detroit, because in New York, this is 45 minutes earlier. All right, I don't know what Robbins is, but you know it's probably around 10:50 or so. In which case, we get another 40 minutes. Imagine if we had to start meeting at 7:15. Imagine the complaints I would get then. 7:45, you can come to shul, you can have a quick meal, half hour, take a break for a half hour, and then have another half hour meal in order to be mekayim shalosh shudas. Let's say you don't want to do that. Maybe you woke up late. You know, it happens to the best of us. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Jeff had asked before, what about egg matzah? Egg matzah, as I said before, is treated, according to Ashkenazim, is treated as chametz. And therefore, egg matzah cannot be used after 11:33. We treat it as chametz. Now, you might find some poskim that say you can be lenient for that, but that is our minhag, and that is the way that we do that. Ron asked an interesting question that I've heard asked before. What about making hamotzi outside and then going inside for the meal? That is tricky. That's tricky because what you have there is called shinoi makom. A shinoi makom is a disconnect between the bracha you made in one spot and the continuation of what you're eating in the next spot. So if you make hamotzi outside, it could very well be that when you move inside, you have to make another hamotzi. That gets pretty complicated in terms of hilchos brachos. What you can do is eat the meal entirely outside, if you want. If you're good enough eating the meal, the bread outside, so presumably you can continue eating the meat out, the bread out, the rest of the meal outside. If you have an enclosed porch, so that's a different story. That could be considered part of the same house. But once you're going outside into the open air, that could be very well considered a different place. And therefore, you would not have a continuation from the outside to the inside. So it's a bit of a complicated sugya, and we generally stay away from it. But let's say you missed the timing. Let's say you got carried away with your first meal. Let's say you ate your first meal, and for your break, you took a schluff, and it turns out it's 11:30 already. Yes, Gavin, good question. Once you start the meal before 11:30 and you ate your bread and you're finished eating your bread, so first of all, you don't forget to get rid of your chametz in the toilet, right? So that you can still mekayim that before 12:30. But also, once you ate your hamotzi, let's say you ate your hamotzi at 11:15, there's no more bread. So then you can continue eating your meal like you were before. The only issue is eating chametz, not having a meal of chametz. So if you're done eating the chametz, you can continue eating everything else after the 11:30 deadline, and you can bench afterward, no problem. You can eat all the way.
Does that interfere with benching?
There's no problem with benching. Benching is always going to be the same as just Shabbos, assuming you're not benching on Yontif, which would be 8 hours later, right?
Okay.
So that would be okay. But let's say you overslept. Let's say you didn't get your second meal in, but you still want to eat shalosh shudas. There's another opinion. And this, by the way, some people will do this even if they had their third meal. There is a stringency some people have to make sure that they have shalosh shudas in the afternoon. and not in the morning. In this case, we're doing it in the morning. So, but there's an opinion that you can only do Shalosh Shudas in the afternoon. So for those opinions, or for those who miss Shalosh Shudas in the morning, so then you can eat something else. This is bidyaved. This is not something we encourage people to do on a usual basis, but you can have something else for Shalosh Shudas in the afternoon. A great possible food for this would be knedelach, because that's something which is not chametz, but it's also mizonos. The best thing to have shalosh shudas after hamotzi is mizonos. It's very difficult to have mizonos on Erev Pesach, which is not chametz, and which is not matzah. Knedelach would suffice if you have that. Otherwise, you can have fruit, you can have meat or fish, something chashiv, something significant, not just water or some you know, basic shakal. So that's another thing. The only caveat to that is you cannot eat too late in the day. It's still Erev Pesach, and we still want to make sure we have an appetite for the Seder. So even if you're going to make some kind of Shalosh Shudas, version of Shalosh Shudas in the afternoon, one way or another, you have to finish that before the end of the 10th hour. Good. Thank you, Ron. We'll get that in a second. I sort of said it before, but I'll repeat it again. When it comes to eating the Shalosh Shudas in the afternoon, so you should make sure to finish eating by 4:50. 4:50 is the end of your Shalosh Shudas. That's because we want to make sure that you're continuing, that you're having an appetite, you're developing an appetite for the Seder that night. It's going to be, you know, 4 hours later or 3.5 hours later. But nonetheless, we want you to have an appetite. So don't eat too late in the afternoon. There are some distinctions. If you remember, we actually went through this on Purim. We talked about how late you can have your Purim meal. We had the same discussion then. Some people were more lenient about that. If you're going into Shabbos, you can't do that this time. You have to finish eating. Kol chamira should be said whenever you're done with your chametz. As I said before, you have to get rid of your chametz by 12:35, and therefore you have to also say kol chamira by 12:35. So you get rid of your chametz, you flush it down the toilet, and then you say kol chamira. Not in the bathroom. Go out of the bathroom and then say kol chamira. Flush down the toilet, go out of the bathroom, and then say kol chamira. There's no bracha or anything like that. It's the same kol chamira that you would say after you burn the chametz. Right? The one that you don't say on Friday morning, that's when you say it on Shabbos morning. You say that one before 12:35, and then you're good to go. Okay. Is that it for Erev Shabbos Pesach? Erev Pesach Shabbos. Any other questions in terms of those caveats and exceptional things? Let me just see if I have anything else here. Anyone else? No? Okay. Oh, some people might ask this question. What about shaking out the tablecloth? Shaking out the tablecloth. Let's say you've got chametz on your tablecloth, and now you're worried. What am I supposed to do? Rabbi Katz said I have to throw everything in the toilet, and now I've got these crumbs. Do I have to somehow collect all these crumbs and put them in the toilet? So technically, you can take the tablecloth, assuming it's some kind of tablecloth where the chametz is not embedded in the tablecloth, assuming it's just sitting on top. So collect the tablecloth very carefully, take it outside, and you can wait and you can shake it out. There are halachic chumras about not doing that in a normal play, in normal Shabbos, but for the sake of getting rid of your chametz, you can do that. Let's assume that it's not a big piece of chametz, just a little crumbs. If it's a big piece of chametz, take it and put it in the toilet. If they're little crumbs, you're worried about that, it's driving you crazy, so then take it out to the backyard and then shake it out. Which is, by the way, another way the Gemara tells us to get rid of chametz. You know, just put it into the wind. Okay, so that is Erev Pesach on Shabbos. Trying to think if there's anything else. Again, you can't make any preparations. This will take us into the Seder. Usually what happens is, and I probably should have mentioned this before also, usually what happens is everyone at the house is ready for the father to get home from shul. They're excited for the Pesach Seder. You're setting up the meal. You're setting up the table. You're getting the ka'ara ready. Everything is sort of getting into gear. Everyone's getting very excited. You can't do that this year until the end of Shabbos, right? You're not allowed to prepare for Shabbos on Shabbos for Yontif. And therefore, you cannot prepare or even light the Yontif candles until 8:36. 8:36 is the magic number. Magic number one was 11:33 a.m. That's when you have to finish eating chametz. Magic number two is 8:36 p.m., which is when you're allowed to start doing things for Pesach. Until then, you can't do anything. So, because of that, let's go retroactively for a second. Now that we know you can't prepare for the Seder until 8:36. So then you might want to start preparing things before Shabbos. So for instance, your shank bone or your eggs that you're going to be roasting, you should roast them before Shabbos so that they're ready at the Seder, so you don't have to roast them on Yontif, which you technically could do. As you know, you're allowed to cook on Yontif for the sake of Yontif, but you can't cook on Shabbos for the sake of Yontif. So you might want to roast those things before Shabbos even starts. Other things that you might have to take into consideration. Your maror, make sure that your maror is ready. Whether, we'll talk about maror hopefully in a second. The maror is either lettuce or your white stuff, your horseradish, whatever you do, whatever your minhag is, you might want to prepare from before Shabbos, because that takes time to check for bugs, to soak the lettuce. You can make salt water on Yontif too, and that doesn't take too long. I think there is a concept of not making salad dressing, but that's a different thing. It has more to do with measuring. For this, you could do it. Yeah, Steve.
Yeah. What I eat the actual root, you know, slices.
Okay.
And that can slice at the Seder, or would you have to slice it before Shabbos?
If it's not time consuming, you know, gazinta, hey, do it at the Seder. It doesn't have to be done before Shabbos. I'm just giving sort of advice for people that don't want to be taking up time at the beginning of Pesach when you want to just get into the Seder already, right? But this could mean for the men in the crowd, this might mean that when you get home from shul, which, by the way, we are going to time so that you get home relatively soon after Tzeis. So our minyan on Motzei Shabbos, we'll probably start Maariv around, I don't know, 8:15, right? Maariv will take 15, 20 minutes with Hallel. So then you'll have to walk home. You might get home at 8:40, 8:45. That might mean that the table's not set. As I said before, that means not get upset and get stressed out. That means pick up a plate and set the table, right? That means help out and do your part to make sure that the Seder can happen as quickly as possible. It could be frustrating. It's not what you're used to in a regular Seder. At a regular Pesach, you usually come home and the table's set and the car is there and the ketzel's waiting for you. It might not be that way this time. So therefore, make sure you have that, you're forewarned. You're forewarned that it might not all be set. And that's a good thing. You don't want it to all be set. Otherwise, someone had violated preparing for Yontif on Shabbos. Okay, there's one other caveat to this. There's one other caveat to this, which is the maror. If the maror that you use, which is, as I will say in a second, is encouraged for people to use, if you don't have a strong minhag otherwise, so then the maror that you use is lettuce. You don't want to soak the lettuce from before Shabbos. This is a sort of a rare, you know, a not so known halacha, that if you soak something for more than 24 hours, it's considered like it's cooked. Not literally that it's cooked, but we assume that there has been some kind of, you know, absorption of whatever it's being soaked in. So if one usually soaks their maror, their lettuce specifically in like a pot or a bucket or a container of water, so that it's clean for Yontif. You cannot do that from before Shabbos and let it hang there for 28 hours, whatever it might be. Because then the maror is considered to be cooked, and you can't have cooked horseradish or cooked lettuce for the sake of maror. But let's go to the Seder itself. Okay. We've gotten through Shabbos. We got through the most complicated Erev Pesach we've ever lived through. And now it's time for the Seder. Now we can just do everything normally. But the question is, what do we do? So here I'm not going to talk through any halachos that you can find in your Haggadah. Follow your Haggadah. Follow your family minhagim. I'm just going to go through those things that maybe you haven't seen or you won't see in your Haggadah. So, number one, Kaddish. Kaddish is something which we all know is part of the first four kosos. But there are other things that go along with Kaddish. First of all, you're making Kiddush for Yontif. You're going to make a Shehachyanu. When you make the Shehachyanu on candles, right, women who are going to make Shehachyanu on the Neros, so you make Shehachyanu, that's for the sake of bringing Yontif in, for the sake of Pesach. The Shehachyanu that we make at Kaddish, that we make at that first Kiddush, is not only for Yontif, but it's for all the mitzvahs we're about to do, right? Think of it in terms of the Shehachyanu that we make on the Megillah in the morning of Purim, right? We make the Shechianu and the Megillah at night for Purim, and then we make Shechianu before we read the Megillah on Purim morning, not only for the Megillah, but also for all the mitzvot hayom, matanos sevyonim, mishloach manos, same thing here. We want to have that in mind. Also very important for women, because there might be a hefsek if you don't have to say Shechianu. But I digress so that we can keep moving here. The shir. So everybody knows themselves better than anybody else knows them. Everybody knows what their alcohol limit is, and everybody knows, what their most beneficial enjoyable Seder experience is. Don't have too much wine. That it's not going to be a good experience. All right, everyone knows this. You also keep in mind, as everybody knows, you're going to be having a lot of alcohol before you have any food, or at least significant amounts of food. So what is the minimal shear that you have to have? You have to have a cup that holds a revius. A revius is obviously, as you can imagine, of much discussion. How big is a revius? Let's assume for the moment that it's 3.3 ounces. Your cup has to be at least 3.3 ounces, and you have to drink most of that cup. Happens to be that maybe for the fourth cup, maybe for the first cup, there's an extra stringency. You want to drink the entire cup. Again, you don't have to get wine if you don't want wine and it's not enjoyable for you to have wine. To be honest, it's preferable to have wine. But if wine is not enjoyable for you and that's not going to be what accomplishes your, feeling of freedom for Pesach night, so then don't drink wine. Drink grape juice. You can use grape juice too. So in that case, you can drink as much as you want unless you have sugar issues. So then take, be careful about the sugar intake. But if it's going to be wine, so make sure that you know yourself, you know how much wine you can take, how much alcohol content you can take. 3.3 ounces is how big the cup has to be minimally. And then you have to have most of that cup. What about the color? The color of the wine. The wine is preferably red. If you do not enjoy red wine, whatever that means, if you don't enjoy red wine, so then you can have white wine. The only thing that I would say is that you should mix in a little red. There is a preference for red wine specifically because of a pasuk combined with the blood. What blood is it referring to? Interestingly enough, it's referring to a negative blood of the Jewish people, as opposed to the other positive bloods of Bris Mila and Karan Pesach. Interesting how that works out. But nonetheless, you're supposed to have red wine. If you don't like red wine, have some, maybe add a little grape juice to it, add a little red wine to it, and then fill the rest up with white wine, or whatever you prefer. There is, in terms of this, there is somewhat of a preference in that order to do the red wine first. Because if you were to do the white wine first and then add the red, that's what we would call tzoveya. A tzoveya is a malacha on Yantif and Shabbos of coloring. You're not supposed to color things on Shabbos. So if you had white wine and you poured red wine into it, you'd be coloring the white wine in red. But if you put the red wine in first and then the white wine, so then you're really just lessening the redness. You're not really making a different color. Yeah, Jerry. I can't hear you. I don't know what it is. Maybe your microphone is off. I heard you before, but now I can't hear you. If you can, you can type it into the chat. I don't know if you know how to do that.
He's muted.
Yeah, well, he wasn't, and then it still wasn't working. But either way.
So what yeah. Candle, what?
Oh, good.
And close candle to use for
good.
When you make a dollar.
Good, Shkoyach Ron. This year is also interesting and unique in that during Kiddush, while you make this Kiddush on that 3.3 ounce cup, at least 3.3 ounces, before you drink it, you have to do what's called Havdalah. Also has a funny acronym called Yaknahaz. Interesting historical connections about what Yaknahaz comes from, but nonetheless, Yaknahaz. Well, I know what the Gemara says. Yeah, Yaknahaz stands for Yom Kiddush Ner Havdalah, but it could be that it was a sort of a cute phrase that sounded similar to another German phrase, but not for now. The Yaknahaz is the order that we say the brachos when we have tons of things to say. And those in Daf Yomi might be familiar with all the ins and outs of what we had to say, but what all those things are and why they're in the order that they are. Suffice it to say, just follow your Haggadah. Follow your Haggadah about what you say. You do not say Besamim. There's no brach on Besamim. Interesting case of why not, but not for now. So you don't say Besamim, but you do say Esh. Yayin Kiddush Ner Havdalah. Right? So you're going to have the wine. You're going to say Brei Peri Gafen. Then you're going to say Mekadesh Yisrael V'Hazmanim, or whatever the bracha is. And then you're going to say a Borei Morei Ha'esh. Now, what fire do you use for Borei Morei? This is Machlokas Aposkim. Some people will say to use your Yantif Licht, right? Use the candles that you lit for the Yantif. Some people will say that you should, yes. Some people will say that you could light a new candle from an existing flame. The only problem with that is you have to get a candle which has two wicks, right? That's usually how we assume you need to make Havdalah on something which has two wicks, so that it's a torch and not just a flame. This, by the way, is something which is a misnomer. If you would want to, it's good enough to take two little tea lights and just put them next to each other. You don't have to take the wicks out and put them all together. You can just do two tea lights right next to each other, and that could be your torch. They're close enough to each other that the flame is considered to be one, and it's not that big of a deal. We're obviously makbid to have the flame intertwined, but it's not that big of a deal. If this is how you want to do it, you can do it. It's based on the Gemara. I talked about it in our WhatsApp for the daily halacha for those who are in that. The best option is to get what's called a Yaknahaz candle. They sell these now. Leave it to the Jews to make up a new product. Yaknahaz candles are smaller candles with double wicks. This is because if you were to use your regular Havdalah candle, so you're not allowed to put out a fire on Yantif. So if you were to make Havdalah on your regular Yantif, on your regular Havdalah candle, you'll have to just, you know, let it burn out and you'll lose your Havdalah candle. And in which case, you should get another candle, which has two wicks, but is smaller. They sell these at One Stop, which apparently is now called The Grove. So you can get those. You can get them at probably Judaica stores also. It's usually called a Yaknahaz candle, even though it's only for the Nair part. For some reason, they call it a Yaknahaz, because that's the only time you would ever need it, when you do the process of Yaknahaz. Then you're going to make Shehachyanu, and Shalom al Yisrael. You'll finish Shabbos. You'll go into Pesach, and all is good. You can go into the Seder. Yeah, Robin, did you have something? No, you just unmuted. I catch it when people unmute. I have an instinct. I've developed an instinct.
Taking it all in.
Okay, I've developed an instinct for seeing when microphones disappear. Okay, moving on. We're going into what's after Kadesh? Orchatz. I'm sure everybody said it. Orchatz. Orchatz is an interesting one. Technically, there's a machlokas rishonim. How can you light a candle on Yantif? This is Moshe iPhone. I don't know who Moshe is. But welcome, Moshe. Is that Chris?
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, hi, Chris. Good. I know you as Moshe, but, you know, sometimes I forget. You're allowed to light a candle on Yantif, assuming you have an existing flame. So you can't light a match. You cannot kindle a fire, but you can light one from another existing one. So, for instance, if you have your Yantif candles, right? Kathy is going to light Yantif candles after 8:36, right? Just like a Shabbos candle, she'll light her Yantif candles. You have to light them later than usual for Shabbos because you can't light them until after Shabbos. So she lights them 8:36. And when it comes to Kiddush, you'll light your special candle or another tea light or two tea lights. You'll light those from the Yantif candles. From the Yantif candles. If you find that on Pesach night, lo and behold, you don't have any candles, you can use your Yantif candles for your Havdalah candle. Okay, it's not the end of the world. You don't have to like run to a neighbor and figure out, you find a non-Jew somewhere. You don't have to do any of that. Just use your Yantif candles.
Thank you.
Good to know also, by the way, that you might want to have a Yahrzeit candle or some kind of bigger candle up so that you can take that light for the sake of Shabbos, for the sake of Yantif Licht, for the sake of this candle, whatever it might be. You might want to have one of those around. A three-day candle usually suffices. Make sure it's away from the kids. Okay. Orchatz. Typically, there's a machlokas rishonim whether or not you always have to wash before you eat vegetables that are soaked, right? So, for instance, pickles. There's a machlokas whether you should wash your hands before you eat pickles. You're going to say, Rabbi, what are you talking about? Are you living on another planet? I've never seen somebody wash their hands for pickles before. That's because we don't paskin like that. We do not paskin that you have to wash your hands for vegetables that are soaked in another liquid. However, on Pesach, it's different. for two reasons. One is a real reason, and one is a funny reason. The real reason is because we're doing things on Pesach night, Zecher LeMikdash. Zecher LeMikdash, we used to be much more stringent, much more scrupulous when it came to the issues of Tuma and Tahara, of purity and impurity. And there is something about the fact that something was dipped in another liquid, which would give over impurity to that vegetable, and therefore we have to wash our hands to prevent getting that liquid on ourselves, or giving it over to the liquid and then putting it back onto the vegetable and eating it, fine. A whole different thing. That's answer number one. On Pesach, we're reliving the Karban Pesach. We're living like it's the Beis HaMikdash times. And therefore, we wash our hands for Orchatz. Technically, we do not paskin like this. And therefore, this is not a real washing. And as you know, we therefore do not make a bracha on this washing. Similarly, for the women, maybe for the men also, if you wear a ring on your fingers, so then you don't have to necessarily take them off if you would usually take them off for washing, because again, this is symbolic. And I think I heard from in B'Shem the Chazon Ish that he was actually makbid to not take the rings off in order so that people know it's not a real washing. People know it's not the same as your normal washing. Okay, so that's washing for Orchatz. The other reason, the funny reason, is as the Gemara says, Kedei Sheishalu Atinokos, so that the children will ask. It's a weird thing. Hey, why are we washing if we're not eating bread? Good question. I don't have a good answer for you, but it's a good question, right? We just want the kids to ask questions. Okay, that's Orchatz. Then we go to what's called Karpas. Interesting, Karpas is unclear what you're supposed to use. Everyone's got their own minhag, right? We can go down the line. I've heard parsley, I've heard potatoes, I've heard bananas. I personally use celery. It could be, Chassam Sofer talks about using celery. Whatever your minhag is, the key is to not eat a kazayas. You can eat it, you make a bracha brei pri hadama, but you don't eat a kazayas. This has to do with a lot of complicated brachos issues in terms of making a bracha achrona afterwards, and possibly the connection to eating the maror. Those in Daf Yomi probably remember the discussion that we had about it. Not for now. Suffice it to say, you make a brei pri adama, but you do not eat a kazayas. So make sure it's small, smaller than your challah rolls that you'll be eating this Shabbos, if you get those special kazayas rolls. That's karpas. You dip it in salt water. You read all your commentaries in your Haggadahs to figure out why that is. Talk about it. Discuss it. Suffice it to say, there are other opinions of what the dipping should be in. Those who are in Daf Yomi know all about the different opinions there. Or maybe some of the opinions there. Karpas. Then we go to yachatz. Yachatz, breaking the matzah. Lots of different ideas about yachatz. Maybe I'll talk about it tomorrow night in my Thursday Haggadol Drasha / Yizkor Appeal. So tune in for that. Maybe we'll talk about yachatz. Maybe we won't. Like everything. So yachatz, you break the matzah. You put the bigger piece away for tzafun for later. That's what tzafun means, to hide it for later. You're going to put the smaller piece into back with the other three matzahs. Everyone's got their own minhag. Some people will put it in the middle. So before you do that, many people will have the minhag to start magid, right? You're holding the smaller piece of matzah. You hold it up and you say, halach ma'anya. This is the poor man's bread. It's broken. It's not full. It's lacking. That's the halach ma'anya. We talked about an interesting Dvar Torah about this concept yesterday for those who were there. You go through Magid, you want to make sure for Magid that you have in mind to be Yotze, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. We always have a mitzvah of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. We always have a mitzvah to remember Mitzrayim every single day. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is different. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim includes saying the story over with a question and answer format. It includes talking about the background. It includes the concept for those in Daf Yomi. Remember, Maschil Beginus Mesayim B'Shvach, that you start with the bad stuff, Avadim Hayinu, or you start with the bad stuff, and then you get to the good stuff, where Hashem redeems us and makes us free. So that's Magid. Some people might get confused about matzah. Oh, Chern, I'm sorry, we started at 7, but you can still get the last 15 minutes here. And you can get...
7-8.
No, not on Wednesday. So either way, it's all right. We're still going, and you can get the first hour on the recording. But I'll also hopefully be sending out a summary of a lot of the stuff that we talked about, especially for Erev Pesach Shabbos. I'll be sending out a summary of the sort of the Sparks Notes for those who want to a quick rundown if you forget things. What do you do with the matzah during Maggid? Right, this sounds like you follow the Haggadah. Some Haggadahs say to uncover the matzahs, right. So what do you do? The general rule is like this: that we know that the word matzah or the word lechem oni. We talked about this yesterday also. Lechem oni can either mean poor man's bread, or it could also mean lechem she'onin alav dvarim harbe, the bread that we say a lot of things about, right? And therefore, for Maggid, we uncover the matzahs. We want to say a lot of things about this matzah. So for Maggid, the default is the matzahs are uncovered. The matzahs stay uncovered. When do you cover them? Whenever you hold up the wine, right? V'hi she'amda. Or when you're doing the dipping, right? So this is when, these are times typically when you'll cover the matzah, right? Lefikach, depending on your minhag, whatever it is. You'll cover the matzahs for those. Again, similar to what we do on Kiddush every Shabbos. We cover the matzahs when we're dealing with the Kiddush. As in order to not embarrass it, you know, we had a halacha about that also in the WhatsApp group. You can go back to that. Let's say you're somebody who has a bunch of kids. Let's say you can't necessarily always be at the Seder for Maggid. So if I had to prioritize the most important parts of Maggid, what would they be? From the Makkos and onward, right? When you talk about the Makkos, when you do the Dam, the Eish, you know, the Simas Ashan, or the Tzach Adash Ba'achav, right? Where you dip the wine. So those are times where you want to be there from that moment onward, right? You want to make sure you get the Pesach Mishma, the Matzah Mishma, the Maror Mishma. You want to make sure you get those parts also. The rest of the Seder is pretty straightforward after we do Motzi Matzah. Let's do Maror also. Motzi Matzah. Let's say Motzi Matzah. What do you have to eat for Motzi Matzah? What do you have to eat? What don't you have to eat? So I don't know if people have the OU... book, but they have this wonderful chart here. I don't know if people have ever seen this. People familiar with this? Very helpful chart. This is the outside is how much maror you have to eat if you're having lettuce. If you're having white horseradish, so it oftentimes is much less than this because horseradish is much more condensed, much more, I guess, dense. So that's the maror for lettuce. And inside here, you see the matzah amount. So what is this matzah for? It actually has numbers here. For the ground horseradish, it says you have to have the volume of 1.1 ounces. And if you're using romaine stalks, it has to cover 3 inches by 5 inches. This is more than that, so I don't know what they're talking about. Oh, romaine stalks might be different from the actual romaine lettuce. Good. Robin has hers from year to year, presumably. Oh, no, you have the actual magazine. I always rip this one out and keep it from year to year, so I have like a ton of them, just in case I'm ever able to have guests at my Seder table. But you'll see here that the matzah is not that big, right? It's not that big. Most people, maybe you remember your father or your Zaidi saying, you have to eat more than whatever it might be. You don't have to eat that much. It depends what kind of matzah you're eating. Sometimes people like to eat thin matzah. I personally like thin matzah. It's easier to eat, but it means I have to take more matzah. So the volume is a little tricky. So if you have one of these charts, so you can follow the chart. For motzi matzah, we say you have to have two kazesim. This is based on a complicated statement of the Rush. For afikomen, we say that you have to have two kazesim. That's also sort of based on a complicated statement. But for afikomen, for Korech, for that sandwich, you actually have the least amount of matzah. You only have to have one kazayas. As you can see here, it has it's not exactly half, although it should be. But I guess we're more machmer, whatever. So I guess my best piece of advice is to actually just get one of these and map out how much matzah you have. Let me see if I can find a measurement online about what the matzah actually should be. According to Ashkenazim, some say it would be 4/5 of a machine matzah or 2/3 of a matzah. For Korech, that would be, again, half of that, 2/5. That's if it's a machine matzah. Not sure. It doesn't say on this website that I'm looking at whether it is also for a regular matzah. Presumably it's less for a regular matzah because the regular matzah is bigger, but it's also not as thick. So unclear. Unclear exactly what it is. Again, get the chart. That's the best way to do it. Okay, that's matzah. That's, so you're going to eat for the first one. You're going to eat from both the top matzah and from the broken matzah. That's partly why you have to have two kazesim. And then for afikoman, you're going to have from the broken matzah. And then obviously add to it because you're not going to have enough to eat all the matzah. Okay. Maror, we said before, maror has to be either, well, it has to be whatever your minhag is. If you don't have a minhag, the best is to use romaine lettuce. But wait a second, Rabbi, romaine lettuce is not bitter. Okay, shkayach, you're not unique in thinking that it's not bitter. However, the Gemara says to use romaine lettuce, okay? Every single person says the same exact thing. I hear this 100 times every Pesach. I know it's not that bitter. I'm aware. But the Gemara says that you should have romaine lettuce. Why do we have romaine lettuce? Because there is a stage in the romaine lettuce that if you allow it to mature, it does become bitter. We don't eat it at that stage, but it does become bitter. And like other things, the maror is symbolic. Just because it can be bitter doesn't mean you have to eat it as bitter. Rabbi, isn't the horseradish more bitter than the romaine lettuce? So first of all, the Gemara doesn't talk about horseradish, which is why it's not preferred. But second of all, horseradish, according to many, is not bitter, it's sharp. Bitter doesn't mean that it hurts your sinuses, right? That's not what bitter means. That's sharp. Now, if you have the minhag to eat horseradish, so eat horseradish. I'm not telling you not to. I'm just pointing out why people prefer romaine lettuce. So that's why romaine lettuce. Some people even go as far as to say that the benefit of romaine lettuce not being bitter is to also symbolize what the Jewish people thought at the beginning of their slavery in Egypt, right? Paro didn't say the second that Yosef came to Mitzrayim, that the brothers came to Mitzrayim, now you have to work on the pyramids. It happened slowly. It wasn't so bitter at the beginning. Ultimately, it became bitter, right? Just like the romaine lettuce, it doesn't always start so bitter, but ultimately becomes bitter. That's why we have romaine lettuce. And if you don't have a minhag otherwise, you should use romaine lettuce. If you speak to another rabbi, maybe they would tell you differently. But unfortunately for you, I'm your rabbi. So there you go, romaine lettuce. What about charoses? Everyone's got their own shita about charoses. Their own minhag. Everyone's got their bubby's recipe, whatever it might be. One of the things that you should have in your charoses, these are just things that are brought down in the Gemara. You should have, actually this is not explicit in the Gemara, but the Mefarshim on the Gemara explain it, that you should have wine in your charoses. Okay, I'm getting head nods. Okay, that's good. What about apples? People have apples in their charoses. Okay, good, apples. That's based on the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, that the women and the men had children, the women had children underneath the apple trees. However, there's a machlokas about whether or not that actually means apples when it says tapuach. Tachas ha-tapuach or artich, in the pasuk in Shir HaShirim. So some people say that that's not possible, that it could be referring to apple trees because there weren't apple trees in Israel or in Egypt. What there were citrus trees. Citrus trees like an esrog. Some people will put esrog juice inside of the charoses. I try to have lemon juice in my charoses because, again, tapuach could just mean citrus, not necessarily an apple. You can do both. Why not do both? Some people also put nuts in their charoses. This is also based on psukim and Shir HaShirim that talk about the nuts, the Jewish people being like nuts, I guess produce and fruitfulness. Some people will put like long somethings, either like cinnamon sticks or something you put in your charoses. That's in reference to the straw that the people had to use to make the bricks. It should not be liquidy. It should be more thick. It should be thicker in order to be representative of the mortar of the bricks. That is explicitly mentioned in the Gemara. So those are different things that people have accustomed to use for their karpas. That's basically all the specific halachos of the Seder. Something else people might ask about leaning. the obligation of leaning at the Seder has sort of had, you know, different iterations throughout history. Different Mefarshim say different things. Generally, we Paskin, or our minhag, is to lean while you're eating the matzah and while you're drinking the wine, right? This is to symbolize freedom, a sense of royalty. It's not necessarily something that royals do nowadays. But again, who's to say that the royals that we have nowadays are real royals? Not getting into politics, but I'm just saying, you know, they say that about, you know, black hats. I don't wear a black hat, but they say, that black hats are, you know, people used to, you know, respectful people used to wear fedoras all the time. You know, you see pictures of people in the 40s and the 50s, they wore hats as a sign of respect. And therefore, you should wear hats as a sign of respect when you're standing in front of Hashem. And people say that, who changed it? Anybody know who changed that custom? This is way off topic. Who knows who changed that custom? That hats were no longer respectful? I believe it's attributed to John F. Kennedy. JFK in the Oval Office took his hat off, and that basically changed the tide. And then some people will look at that and say, well, that doesn't mean that it's no longer respectful to wear a hat. It just means that the president is no longer respectful. So that's where some of that conversation comes from. Not for now. But similarly, when it comes to other things like leaning, that has changed throughout history, and therefore you'll find some Mefarshim say that you don't have to lean. Some people say that you still have to lean. So our minhag is that you lean during the matzah, you lean during the wine. If you don't lean and you do it, technically you don't have to do it again, but it would be better if you did it again. So you have to make sure to lean. How do you lean? Leaning doesn't mean turning your body sideways. Leaning means being on top of something else. So if you only have a chair, so then you'll take your chair and you'll lean against the chair, right? You have to be leaning against something, right? It doesn't just mean leaning over, right? This is not the Tower of Pisa. This is actually leaning on something. It used to be that they would recline on these, you know, what do you call those things? I know the word, chaise, like a chaise lounge or something like that, right? You would actually lay down to eat, right? That's how royals used to sit. So that's what we try to do. You do it on the left side. Unclear exactly why. Not for now. I mean, it is clear, but unclear whether the accuracy of it. But you lean to the left side. And that you should do for all the matzah and all of the cups. Trying to think of anything else. Any other questions? Things that come up every Seder, you're like, oh, we should have asked the rabbi. Or, you know, we always forget this every year. Any questions about the Seder? Anything else? How late does your Seder have to go? There's no real time. However, if those are in the WhatsApp Halacha group, so then you might have seen that I put out a video earlier this week, maybe last week, about when you have to finish the Afikomen. Technically, there is the best possible time to finish the Afikomen is by Chatzos. Again, in Detroit, we're lucky. I think Chatzos is something like 1:35 or something like that. It's very late, in which case, you don't have to, you don't really have to hurry up too much, depending on, I mean, depends who's at your Seder and what conversations you get into and whether you fall asleep. You should not fall asleep during the Seder. Those in Daf Yomi know what I'm talking about. But suffice it to say, finish before 1:35 and you should be okay. At least finish the Afikomen. If you don't, it's not the end of the world. Technically, you might have already accomplished what you needed to with eating the matzah beforehand. Okay, anything else? Any questions?
I have a question.
Yeah, Cherna.
How do I get your talk?
Oh, well, after I finish this, I will upload it. It might take a few minutes to upload because it's going to be an hour and 20 minutes. But you can find it on YU Torah. You can find it on Apple Podcasts. Or you can find it on the Shul website. If you go to the Shul website, yiop.org, there's a tab on top that says Torah. And under there, if you scroll down, you can find all the classes I ever give are all there, except the ones on Shabbos. Except for the ones on Shabbos. We don't record my Shabbos Shirim. So tough for those who aren't in shul to hear it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, anything else for the Seder? Anybody else? Seder going once. The Seder going twice. Okay, we'll save the pledging for tomorrow night. Tomorrow night. We have our Thursday Haggadah Drasha in place of the Shabbos Haggadah Drasha, also going to be our Yizkor Appeal. As you know, we don't have the normal stream of revenue that we usually do for the shul, and therefore, we would really appreciate everyone's support. Tomorrow night, I'll be giving a Drasha. Not exactly sure what the title is, but you'll get it sometime tomorrow, hopefully with a source sheet, and you will hopefully enjoy the shiur. And during the shiur, as we did for Shabbat Shuvah, you can donate in the chat or pledge in the chat. You can speak to Gil, you can speak to anybody on the executive committee, you can speak to them beforehand also, and hopefully we will make sure to keep the show lights on, because I have been spending a lot of time in the office, and it would not be good if they went off. Okay, thank you all for joining. Thank you again to the Flats, the Feldmans, and the Summers for sponsoring tonight's class in honor of Bradley Siegelbaum, Mirza Hashem, our learning, and anybody else who listens to this recording's learning should be le'iloi nishmaso. If you have any other individual questions or clarifications you want to know about, so please don't hesitate to reach out. If you haven't sold your chametz, so then definitely reach out, or haven't authorized me to sell your chametz, definitely reach out, and we can take care of it ASAP. Okay, everybody, have a chag kasher v'sameach, and Mirza Hashem, we should enjoy Seder's together, hopefully sometime in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, all the best.
Rabbi, thank you.
Shkayach to you. Thank you. Enjoy Yantif. Mirat Hashem.